Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network presents the Roundtable Report, a discussion of today's issues. So the kid gloves are off as we listen to real answers from real people. Come and join us on the Roundtable Report.
And good evening. I'm John Jeffers, your host here at the Contra Radio Network, welcoming you to the Roundtable Report. If you'd like to call in and opine, our number is 516-453-9389. 516-453-9389. I see Chuck from Round Lake has checked in. One thing I want to talk about right off the bat is a commentary from the Rutherford Institute by John Whitehead. This is important, Terry, because we've talked about this a few times. You know, a couple weeks ago, we actually talked about it. And one of the things that Terry found, he thought this was really good, and he wanted me to share it, so I'm going to share it with you. And the commentary is entitled, "There Will Be No Second American Revolution, The Futility of an Armed Revolt," by John Whitehead, posted July 18th at the Rutherford Institute. I'm sorry, the Rutherford.org. Rutherford.org, he's with the Rutherford Institute. It's a think tank dedicated to the defense of civil liberties and human rights. James Madison once said, "A standard military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty." America is a ticking time bomb. All that remains to be seen is who or what will set fire to the fuse. We are poised at what seems to be the pinnacle of a manufactured breakdown, with police shooting unarmed citizens, snipers shooting police, global domestic violence rising, and a political showdown between two presidential candidates equally matched in unpopularity. The preparations for the Republic and Democratic National Convention taking place in Cleveland and Philadelphia, augmented by a $50 million federal security grant for each city, provide a foretaste of how the government plans to deal with any individual group that steps out of line. They will be censored, silenced, spied on, caged, intimidated, interrogated, investigated, recorded, tracked, labeled, held at gunpoint, detained, restrained, arrested, tried, and found guilty. For instance, anticipating civil unrest and mass demonstrations in connection with the Republican Party convention, Cleveland officials set up a makeshift prisons, extra courtrooms to handle protesters, and shut down a local university in order to house 1,700 riot police and their weapons. The city's courts are preparing to process up to 1,000 people a day. Additionally, the FBI has also been conducting interviews with activists in advance of the convention to discourage them from engaging in protest. Make no mistake, the government is ready for a civil uprising. Indeed, the government has been preparing for this moment for years. A 2008 Army War College report revealed that widespread civil violence inside the United States would force the defense establishment to reorient priorities and extremists to defend basic domestic order and human security. The 44-page report goes on to warn that potential causes for such civil unrest could include terrorist attack, unforeseen economic collapse, loss of functioning political and legal order, purposeful domestic resistance or insurgency, pervasive public health emergencies, and catastrophic natural and human disasters. Now, subsequent reports by the Department of Homeland Security to identify, monitor, and label right-wing and left-wing activists and military veterans as extremists, also known as terrorists, have manifested into full-fledged pre-crime surveillance programs. Almost a decade later, after locking down the nation and spending billions to fight terrorism, the DHS has concluded that the greater threat is not ISIS, but domestic right-wing extremism. Meanwhile, the government has been amassing an arsenal of military weapons for use domestically and equipping and training their troops for war. Even government agencies with largely administrative functions, such as the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Smithsonian, have been acquiring body armor, not helmets and shields, cannon launchers, and police firearms and ammunition. In fact, there are now at least 120,000 armed federal agents carrying such weapons who possess the power to arrest. Rounding out this profit-driven campaign to turn American citizens into enemy combatants and America into a battlefield is a technology sector that is colluding with the government to create a big brother that is all-knowing, all-seeing, and inescapable. It's not just the drones. Fusion centers, license plates readers, Stingray devices, and the NSA that you have to worry about. You're also being tracked by the black boxes in your cars, your cell phones, smart devices in your home, grocery loyalty cards, social media accounts, credit cards, streaming services such as Netflix, Amazon, and ebook reader accounts. All of this has taken place right under our noses, funded with our taxpayer dollars, and carried out in broad daylight without so much as a general outcry from the citizenry. It's astounding how convenient we've made it for the government to lock down the nation. We've even allowed ourselves to be acclimated to the occasional lockdown of government buildings, Jade Helm, military drills in small towns so that special operations forces can get realistic military training in hostile territory, and live actor shootive drill training exercise carried out at the schools, shopping malls, and on public transit, which can and do fool law enforcement officials, students, and teachers, and bystanders into thinking it's a real crisis. The events of recent years, the invasive surveillance, the extremism report, the civil unrest, the protests, the shootings, the bombings, the military exercises and active shooter drills, the color-coded alerts and threat assessments, the fusion centers, the transformation of local police into extensions of the military, the distribution of military equipment and weapons to local police forces, the government databases containing names of dissidents and potential troublemakers have all conjoined to create an environment in which we, the people, are more distrustful and fearful of each other and more reliant on the government to keep us safe. Of course, that's the point. The powers that be want us to feel vulnerable. They want us to fear each other and trust the government's hired gunmen to keep us safe from terrorists, extremists, jihadists, psychopaths, etc. Most of all, the powers that be want us to feel powerless to protect ourselves and reliant on the grateful but the dubious protection provided by the American police state. While the strategy is working, the tree of liberty is dying. There will be no second American Revolution. There is no place in our nation for the kind of armed revolution our forefathers mounted against a tyrannical Great Britain. Such an act would be a futile and tragic. We are no longer dealing with a distant imperial king, but with a tyrant of our own making, a militarized technologized, heavily financed bureaucratic machine that operates beyond the reach of the law. The message being to the citizenry is clear. There will be no revolution, armed or otherwise. Anyone who believes that they can wage and win an armed revolt against the American police state has not been paying attention. Those who wage violence against the government and their fellow citizens are playing right into the government's hands. Violence cannot and will not be the answer to what ails America. Whether instigated by the government or the citizenry, violence will only lead to more violence. It does not matter how much firepower you have, the government has more firepower. It does not matter how long you think you can hold out by relying on survivalist skills, guerrilla tactics, and sheer grit. The government has the resources to outwait, outstarve, outman, outgun, and generally overpower you. The government of wolves will not be overtaken by force. Unfortunately, we waited too long to wake up to the government's schemes. We did not anticipate that we, the people, would become the enemy. For years, the government has been warning against the dangers of domestic terrorism, erecting surveillance systems to monitor its own citizens, creating classification systems to label any viewpoints that challenge the status quo as extremist and training law enforcement agencies to acquaint anyone possessing anti-government views as a domestic terrorist. What the government failed to explain was that the domestic terrorists would be the government's own making, whether intentional or not, by waging endless wars abroad, by bringing the instruments of war home, by transforming police into extensions of the military, by turning a free society into a suspect society, by treating American citizens like enemy combatants, by discouraging and criminalizing a free exchange of ideas, by making violence its calling card through SWAT team raids and militarized police, by forming division and strife among the citizenry, by acclimating the citizenry to the sights and sounds of war, and by generally making peaceful revolution all but impossible. The government has engineered an environment in which domestic violence has become inevitable. What we are now experiencing is a civil war devised and instigated in part by the U.S. government. The outcome for this particular conflict is already a foregone. The police state wins. The objective, compliance and control. The strategy, destabilize the economy through endless wars, escalate racial tensions, polarize the populace, heighten tensions through a show of force, intensify the use of violence, and then, when all hell breaks loose, clamp down on the nation for the good of the people and the security of the state. So where does that leave us? Despite the fact that communities across the country are, for all intents and purposes, being held hostage by a government that is armed to the teeth and more than willing to use force in order to maintain order, most Americans seem relatively unconcerned. Worse, we have become so fragmented as a nation, so hostile to those with whom we might disagree, so distrustful of those who are different from us, that we are easily divided and conquered. We have been desensitized to violence, acclimated to a military presence in our communities, and persuaded that there is nothing we can do to alter the seemingly hopeless trajectory of the nation. In this way, the floundering economy, the blowback arising from military occupations abroad, police shootings, the nation's deteriorating infrastructure, and all the other mounting concerns have become non-issues to a populace that is easily entertained, distracted, manipulated, and controlled. The sight of police clad in body armor and gas masks wielding semi-automatic rifles and escorting an armored vehicle through a crowded street, a scene likened to a military patrol through a hostile city, no longer causes alarm among the general populace. We are fast becoming an anemic, weak, pathetically diluted offspring of our revolutionary forebears, incapable of mounting a national uprising against a tyrannical regime. If there is to be any hope of reclaiming our government and restoring our freedoms, it will require a different kind of coup, nonviolent, strategic, and grassroots, starting locally and trickling upwards. Such revolutions are slow and painstaking. They are political, in part, but not through any established parties or politicians. Most of all, he makes clear in his book, Battlefield America, The War on the American People, for any chance of success, such a revolution will require more than a change of politics. It will require a change of heart among the American people, a reawakening of the American spirit and the citizenry that cares more about their freedoms than their fantasy games. Right now, we'll welcome in Chuck, and we welcome in Terry. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome. Thank you for waiting while I finish that commentary.
Thank you for having
us.
Howdy.
Wanted to thank you for waiting while I finished that commentary. I thought it was very good, Terry. I'm glad you found that. I think it says quite a bit.
Yeah, I thought I recognized that. I read that and I thought, man, this is like, get the right person to read that. I was hoping that you would read it. Not me. You're a better reader than me.
Well, that's because I've been doing this for too long. You know what?
Well,
when I was reading it and I got to the part of the commentary where the government says that right-wing extremism is actually what they're really worried about. What did I say it was? Oh, yeah, here it is. The DHS has concluded that the greater threat is not ISIS, but domestic right-wing extremism. They're right. They're absolutely right. And I'll tell you why they're right. Because we right-wing extremists are the only ones that seem to catch what's going on and are willing to fight back. I don't know of any lefty that has actually even owns a firearm, much less has even thought about raising his hand to the government. I see Camo Mike has logged in. Welcome, sir. He's in the chat room.
You know, it's the right wing. Yeah, I think we are. There's left wing also. There's more left wing extremists than there are right wing extremists. But it's the word extremist that gets me. Am I an extremist because I believe in the Constitution and I'm a patriot?
How about calling them left-wing activists? I mean, they'll go to the street and they'll rely on the police to protect them while they spew their nonsense. But God forbid a right-wing organization goes to the street and they throw an absolute fit. And I will say this. This was written before the Republican convention in Cleveland. And I saw plenty of pictures of open carry going on in Cleveland, and there was no nonsense. So call it what it is, you know. I don't know that Kamo Mike is in the chat room, and he says, howdy. So, yeah, you're right. Why are you an extremist, and they're called activists?
I don't know. Most of your killings nowadays really come from either Muslims or liberals.
Well, we got
are they insane? Yeah, I think they're insane for doing it in the first place. But and then they cop this insanity plea, but they didn't think that they were insane when they were planning it.
Well, I would say part of the modus operandi, if you will, the MO. Is basically the fabrication of narration and a perception. It's a fabricated public perception that the liberal controlled news media, as well as the blogosphere, are, for the most part, trying to spread and to give the American people the perception, and I'm using the word perception in quote, that the Republicans or conservatives or Trump are the crazy, misogynist, homophobic, and violent, corrupt people, while the liberals are the saints and the deliverer from all evil. And if there's no way you can possibly go further from the truth, unfortunately, with millennials as well as a lot of other people that are in the electorate, who for the most part don't know how to read, don't know how to do their own research, do not know how to even look up past voting records on the you know, in Congress or in Capitol Hill at the Federal Library online, then basically what we have is a really large collection of the lowest common denominator, believing that they're in the right, not because they are, but because, again, perception. They believe they're in the majority, and the majority, for some reason, they equate to being right when the two are absolutely mutually exclusive, one having nothing to do with the other. And there is no group more guilty of doing this than the Democrats and liberals and whatnot.
Well, then.
Well, I guess if you tell a lie loud enough, people will start listening. They just got the microphone. They got the bully pulpit with the presidency. They got the bully pulpit with their social leaders like Al Sharpton and all them, right? Then they've got the bully pulpit of the media. I mean, but who does the Republicans have or conservatives? We've got some talk show radio guys, but that's just, you know, a few shows on TV and a few shows on the radio. But who's out there up to speak?
Right. It's, yeah, for some reason, I'm just every time I listen to the news media, I'm just, you know, shaking my head in complete disbelief how, you know, how obvious and openly blatant the Democrats are in trying to paint this fairy tale, fictitious narration, and many of them. But I don't know. It just seems that collectively the American electorate have all been dumbed down to the point of, you know, dur with a capital D. I don't know how else to explain it other than that. It's just. I don't know, man.
Well, don't, you know what? There's, I think this commentary says quite a bit. And look, I don't like what I see, but on the other hand, when we talk about an American Revolution, the article states very clearly the military has the weapons, the people, the logistics. I mean, what chance do you really, truly have?
The only way to fight something like that is through guerrilla tactics.
And even then.
Underground system. Yeah, I mean, even then, you could be told. You could be told out because somebody loose-lipped.
Oh, yeah. Not only that, but most people don't have the stomach for it. However, we do have the stomach to watch the E! Network and those fools, the Kardashians. Oh, my God. We got to watch them. We got to see what they're up to. But we don't have the wherewithal to sit here and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, and do something about it. They're very placated. Hey, let's go play Pokemon Go. Oh, okay. And off they go. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. A whole lot of research and people going out there trying to get it in Pokemon. They'll spend more time doing that than they will, you know, kids doing homework or men doing paying their bills or playing with their children, you know, their children, paying attention to their kids. But they'll put in a whole lot of research and study on how to play any of these games when they should be paying attention to the economy, the price of oil. What does the dollar look like? What is the gold and silver? How is the textile industry? You know, how's the housing market? What's going on with the banks? What's going on? You know, there's a lot of different things. It's like the big picture is what you should be going for. But nope, you're right. They want to go for Pokemon.
Gotta go Pokemon. Gotta do that.
Yeah, I have a 17-year-old kid.
People are very easily distracted.
Oh, yeah. I have a 17-year-old boy, and he's into that stuff, Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
And it's harmless. It's just a game, this and that. If it got too crazy, well, then I'd have to start pull the reins back on that. But he's not doing anything, you know, outrageous about it, like going across country or some shit. But like, luckily he doesn't go too silly with these things. But it amazes me how you got grown adults doing this stuff.
Well, that's just it. And these are adults that live in mom's basement, who vote Democratic, who want to be taken care of for the rest of their life so they can sit their fat ass in the chair and play Pokemon Go and everything else that goes on being taken care of, instead of growing up, being a mature individual, responsible in society. I want the government to take care of me because I'm too stupid and lazy to do it myself. And I want what I want, and I want it for free. And if you disagree with
I don't want to work.
Then you're a racist
too hard.
Or a bigot, or you're some kind of ist. So kiss it.
Yeah, that's one of the worries that I got about this, you know, fighting what is going on as normal, as opposed to when we were that age.
Oh, yeah.
And the things that we were taught back in the day, like it, you could talk, you don't get to talk back to adults. And then they get to talk back to adults because they want to justify their reasoning behind it. It's like, you know what? If you just like when people get in trouble with the cops, if you shut your mouth and listen or do what you were supposed to do, this thing wouldn't have gotten as big as it did. You know what
I
mean?
No, that's another thing. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a good point. Everyone's a victim. Everyone is entitled with rights. Kids think they have rights when they're actually being disciplined because they're stupid and their parents try to discipline them. All of a sudden, they're bad parents. They're bad, abusive parents. cops are no longer the defenders of truth and justice and the public trust and the enforcers of law and order, because even prisoners who are known record criminals have more rights than average Americans do, or white people do. Basically, the very, I want to say, the history of democratic and liberal policy is for the most part marked by which group is being marginalized at a given time. White people, Christians, cops, soldiers,
Jews,
straight people. That's pretty much, yeah, it's what they do. And unfortunately, if they repeat it over and over and over again, it's like mental conditioning or programming, and then they begin to respond to it and believe it, not because it's true, but because they were programmed to. It's like hypnosis on a grand scale, all delivered to the American people via multiple electronic mass communication services, printed newspapers, blogs, websites, and even televised news broadcasts. It's just really, it's like I'm watching an episode of The Shadow with that Baldwin guy and this one bad dude pretty much hypnotized the entire city. But this is exactly what's going on, but on a national scale. It's just absolutely unbelievable.
Watch this.
Kind of like that one montage. Yeah, it's kind of like that one montage I gave when I was saying America is the fog in the hot water.
Oh, yeah.
The temperature's going up. And nobody's doing anything about it.
We just sit there and say, okay. I know, I get it. But I wanted to make sure that we understood. Look, let's be honest. I'm preaching to the choir right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's the others out there. Decades ago, it was the lefties screaming, don't trust the government, don't trust the authority, don't trust government. Well, now they've been in power for a few terms, it's trust the government, don't question the authorities. What the hell happened? Those dirty old hippies just changed everything. And now we start agreeing with the dirty old hippies, they say, oh, no, that's wrong now. So.
Right.
Like the Weather Underground. First they're bombing the government, and now they're working for the government.
Isn't that amazing?
That's my telephone, but I'm not going to answer it. Okay. one thing I will say about the Clinton, you know, just like the entire progress of the Democrats and liberals is it can be measured based on how many people are being, or what groups are being marginalized at a given time.
Well, that's probably true.
The Clinton administration and Hillary Clinton's and their presidency from the 90s can be measured by how many, the body count that they leave behind during the 90s and throughout the 21st century. You heard about that Democratic AIDS death that occurred. Julian Assange of WikiLeaks pretty much had commentary and a theory about that. But when you have a president, Bill Clinton, who was, in office for 2 terms or 8 years, and you got people dying left and right. Mary Katie Mahoney, a White House intern, John F. Kennedy Jr., he was a potential candidate for a senator from New York. His plane developed mysterious mechanical problems. Sandy Hume, journalist. Herschel Friday, attorney and Clinton fundraiser. William Kobe, director of Central Intelligence, retired. Ron Brown, former chairman of DNC and Commerce Secretary. Suzanne Coleman had an affair with Clinton when he was Attorney General of Arkansas. She died. L.J. Davis, reporter investigating Clinton scandals, attacked at his hotel room in Little Rock, Arkansas, and his notes were stolen. Daniel Dutko, chairman of Leadership 2000. Herschel Friday, attorney and Clinton fundraising. And the list goes on and on and on and on. Okay, and now it's happening again during Hillary's presidential campaign. John Ash, former United Nations General Assembly President, died. Berta Caceres, human rights activist in Honduras, died when she implicated Clinton in her country for something that happened to her family. I'm not entirely sure what the whole detail is because there's a long list for me to go through. Michael Hastings, journalist for Rolling Stones. Sean Lucas, attorney. Joe Montano, chairman of the DNC. You know, it's I'll put it this way. There is very few Democratic administrations that have the body count as long as the Clinton administration certainly does.
There are no Democratic administrations that have a body count like that. None. You're right. It's not a little.
You're absolutely right. Thank you. And especially none with elites. It's so affluent. I mean, they're high-profile victims as well. So to me, that just tells me, hey, go ahead.
Yeah, the only way you can equal something like that is if you start hitting the Soviet blocs, like Eastern Germany or Russia.
Well, right, the Eastern Bloc countries, the former ones. Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to hit a body count with so much of a coincidence. And some of these people were picked in to testify, too.
Yeah, guess who's at the top of the list? Your favorite friend and mine from WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. That's why, and he's still hiding out in the embassy. For how long? I don't know. The moment go ahead.
The Ecuadorians have been catching a lot of pressure to clamp down on him. I'd like to know where that pressure is coming from. I think we all know.
Probably a lot. Probably a lot of diplomatic and economic pressure.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well.
Oh, I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it.
Hey,
here's
a news bite. Yeah, go ahead.
The worst part is we have a complicit news media who will cover it up and flat out ignore it. If this was a Republican administration, they'd be sending their wolf packs, tearing this story apart, trying to find stuff. But because of it's the Democrats and Hillary, oh no, we'll ignore that. We'll just act like that story doesn't exist. That only, you know, Kool-Aid drinkers, only the Kool-Aid drinkers believe in that.
Exactly. Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said a bad word. Get me going, and I lose control sometimes.
Don't worry about me. Right. I'm Christian. I'm all about forgiveness, brother. I'm not being sarcastic. I really am.
No, I'm good with it, man. I just some things it gets me so irritated. I've got to get on the soapbox, and I'm ranting and raving before I know it.
Hmm.
Oh.
Hey, here's a new bit of trivia. It may have been reported maybe once or twice. If you're lucky, they may have mentioned it on the broadcast news media. You've heard about what's happening in Venezuela, right?
Of course. We follow it closely.
Right. As close to SHTF as you can possibly get. A what seems to be a pre-apocalyptic anarchy as a result of a severe food shortage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People are breaking into the zoos and trying to eat the animals for food. They're even killing their pets for food. That's how bad things are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any of it. Right.
Right.
Go ahead.
And they sent the people from the cities into the countryside to farm. And do you know why they did that? Because you can hide the bodies better.
I love it. Well,
yep.
That's tragic.
Not everybody comes back.
That's right. And dead people, you don't have to feed or take care of.
Here's
yeah.
what caused it, though. Fox
oh.
News, when they reported it, they said that it was a failure of social policy. I would say that that's a contributing factor. It's a contributing factor, but it's not the sole cause. Everyone remembers OPEC and Saudi Arabia decided to increase their oil production.
Right.
Well
output.
Beyond. Yeah, well beyond consumer demand, to the point when the supply outpaced the demand maybe 10 times, 100 times, who knows how much. The price the price of oil per barrel decreased significantly.
Right.
And the original purpose that Saudi Arabia did that was to basically make oil so cheap that the American shale companies will no longer
there
be able to reap profits. Right.
Right.
They won't be able to reap profits, and the process of separating shale from the oil will become so expensive and the profits so low they can't financially justify it anymore. And as a result, for the past two, maybe 3 years, many American shale oil companies have been filing
they've
for bankruptcy and doing mass
yeah.
layoffs.
Right.
Yeah.
They've gone out of business.
But what OPEC did not intend to do was to starve the people of Venezuela, because in Venezuela, their main import, or I'm sorry, export product is oil. So
all their eggs in one economic basket and hope for the best.
Exactly. So, you know, thanks to Saudi Arabia and the other OPEC nations for starving a country who, let's be honest, they're not really friendly to the United States anyways, Hugo Chavez. And I think he's dead anyways, right? But for the most part, still, it's weird, the web that is weaved and how things connect. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's called the law of unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's exactly what it is. I think, before I forget, Terry, I think Terry knows this already. If you want to, we're going to do, CRN has a couple raffle items we're going to use to raise some funds for the radio station here. It's on the Facebook page right now. We won't start the raffle until actually I get the items in my hot little hands, and then we'll start the raffle. And we got a few more details to be worked out, but if you want to take a look at what we've got, two of these backpacks, 5-day supplies, packed and ready to go. So
let me take a look at your Facebook page here.
There you go. There it is.
I'm not eligible. Damn.
Why? How come you're not eligible? Explain that.
Well, I kind of work with CRN, you know. Some people might throw a fit if you're associated with it
There's four of us that are not eligible. Terry, Julie, Kirk, and myself. We're not eligible to win. But everybody else will.
That means I'm eligible. Yay!
Well, you're just a caller. You're all right.
So how do I enter the raffle? Let me see here.
Well,
I'm trying to read this.
Read at the bottom. I said more information will be coming soon.
Okay, got it. All right.
I think Kirk's going to...
You're such a teaser.
I am.
Yeah. It's like, oh, come on. I want, but I can't have.
We all do.
I think my wife does the same thing. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, my wife wants a bunch of purses and shit. I'm like, yeah, you just save it up.
This is like a man purse, only it's better.
It's a man purse for both arms.
You said man purse?
It's a man purse. It's a man purse that goes in your car and save your life. Or you could use it as a get-home bag, use it for a variety of things. But I think, we should have, like I said, we'll start. I'm supposed to have the items in my hand by the 18th. I'm sure I'll get it before then. However, in the meantime, Kirk and I are working out the details on it right now. So, yes, Camo Mike, it is camo. I knew you guys were going to like that. I knew you guys wanted that. So we got, ordered the camo. If you go, Kamo Mike, if you go to the Facebook, Contra Radio Network Facebook page, you'll see a picture of it and all the little goodies that come into it as well.
Newsflash, everyone, it's Wednesday, and Wise Company is offering a discount on the 3-day survival kits again, 50% off. Boom!
There you go. Say it again, nice and slow.
Okay, Wise Company, 3-day survival kits or food supplies, each box 50% off. We're talking $15.99 per box, or $20.
There you go. Who's got $20 to? Who's got $20 if they don't want to spend at the bar? And take that $20 and be responsible enough to start prepping for you and your family. I'll tell you right now.
So, right?
You take that. Yeah. Well, you know what? Take $100, and every day for the next 5 days, order that up as much as you can before it's over.
Yeah, hey, Jeff, John, I'm going to put this on your page. Can you go ahead and approve it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, done.
Dum, 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 dum. See, this is the beauty of the radio show. Okay, we're done with the armed revolution, the futility of it, because we all know that, it's not good. We know that. We know it's not going to happen. Oh, what else have we got to talk about? This is the roundtable report. So you and Terry called in. You and Terry can pick the subject to discuss.
Remember you asked me a question on Sunday. What did I think about the show on Saturday, the Julie show?
Yeah.
And all
of a
sudden, I developed issues with my computer, and when I tried dialing in, you're closing down the radio program. So I'm like, oh damn. Okay. So can I give my answer now?
Go ahead, sir. Fire away.
Okay. The show was great. It had really big participation. Dawn is really knowledgeable and really into what it is that she does. I think the conversation kind of veered into the challenges of dealing with the emotional stability of kids rather than the actual items that you put into a like get out of Dodge bag or something like that for the kids.
Uh-huh.
I think if you could have had for me, and this is just me, but really the direction went whatever direction the dialogue or the conversation kind of drifted to. But for me, I would have liked to have more details as far as ideas to put into the get out of Dodge bags for kids and pre-adolescents and adolescents and so on and so forth. But maybe we can that can be addressed at a later show. Who knows?
Okay. Good feedback. Good feedback. Mm-hmm. Terry,
okay.
Did you fall asleep?
Sorry, Terry. My bad.
Terry, did you fall asleep, buddy? Terry.
I'm sorry. I put it on mute. I'm sorry.
I thought you fell asleep.
I had a short conversation. I'm sitting there talking to you, and I'm like, hello? While you were talking, I had a short conversation with my son about his work, and then I forgot to push the button back again. Anyway, I got CRS off of CRN. Y'all know what CRS is, right?
Oh yeah.
Anyways, I had a discussion with a friend of mine.
Yes.
And this guy was talking about how Muslims, there are some great Muslims in the world, and we should be making friends with them.
Okay.
And I'm like, I have had it with Muslims. I am done trying to be friends with them until I see something different. You know, I'm not going out and meeting anybody. And that, you know, that they should be able to enrich my life and things like that. And I'm like, I'm trying to keep it clean. I'm
right.
Like, you know, I don't give a damn about them. And no, I'm not talking about Arabs. I'm talking about Muslims. I'm talking about the ideologies that go behind that. And, you know, I said, did I say all of them are evil? I said, no. But I don't trust any of them. Not one. Because of history is teaching me this. And in modern day, you can't trust any of them. They'll lie to you, do this and that. Meanwhile, they got a family member or one of their neighbors that they're like the front people that are nice, and then behind them is somebody doing something wrong. So, you know, I am not worried about this. Now I had one of my army buddies on there, and he's like, hey, you know, both of you guys are nice guys, but Terry, he's like, he was in the infantry with me. He's like, Terry's like me. We're hammers. We see things that are wrong, we nail it. You know, and I said, hey, you know, I'm an American patriot, and when I see a threat, I take it serious. And don't expect me to have a whole lot of respect for things that I see as a threat. So, what do you think?
Terry?
Yes?
Would you like to greet the NSA tonight?
Hey, for all you NSA squids, yeah, we're out here. You want to come see me? Come and get me!
And we welcome the NSA to the broadcast. Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it. Check in with us sometime. We'd love to hear from you. Don't worry. We're all going to be on the list. Just remember this. The list is long but distinguished.
Yeah, but what worries me is what Hillary's going to do with that list.
Oh.
You know, I'll be honest with you, the last thing I want to do is become fodder.
You're right. Well, yeah. Well, most doctors recommend not dying, so follow that. You'll be
right.
So 9 out of 10 doctors don't recommend dying, so don't become fodder.
Right. Well said.
Well, you know, I try to be. I want to help. I want to be your friend. I want to be Terry's friend. I want to be friends with everybody. Because I liked everybody.
Right.
I hate everybody equally.
Well,
hey,
that's not
so,
true.
So, right. Okay, so Saturday's... What do you have planned for Sunday there?
Sunday, I want to talk about the golden hour. What to do in the first 60 minutes of a critical incident. I'll talk
Ooh.
About that on Sunday. I believe Miss Julie is still on vacation in Florida. I don't know if she'll do her show on Saturday, but I'll tell you what. I'll get hold of her. I think she's still shell-shocked from last week. She's just like, and I said, you did fine. You handled it the best you could. I said, sometimes, you know, it happens that way. If anybody thinks that this
uh-huh.
is a professionally run studio and program with all the accoutrements, it's not. This is a laptop with a couple USB connections and a little mini mixer board. That's about it. And sometimes it doesn't go as planned. It happens. So I was trying to, so I was told Julie, I said, don't let it shake you. Don't let it throw you. It happens sometimes. But she handled
it.
I thought she handled it fine. I thought she handled it fine. You know, it happens. It's happened to me more times than I can count. You know, Terry will tell you, the last time that this whole thing went to hell was we were doing the interview with Mike from Amerageddon.
Oh.
That was
beautiful.
Terry was able to carry it off. I was sitting there throwing a fit, headset.
I thought you were going to quit.
Microphones weren't working, or they were both working at the same time. I must have sounded like a total moron. And then the more things didn't work and things broke down, the more pissed off I got. And I finally said, okay, just sit back. Let's take a look at what's going on here. And I finally got it together, but it happens. It happens sometimes. It's just the way it is. The nature of podcasting and doing live broadcasts when, you know, it was just me and after, you know, sometimes I can't get in, which was the case
mm-hmm.
on Saturday. It's like every time I got in, I cut Julie off. I said, that's it. I'm done. I heard Terry. I heard you taking over a few times, which was good. You know, that's perfect. That's what this is about. That's why we have it. So, yeah, I said, I'm not upset. And then I told her, don't be upset. It happens sometimes.
There were some people that were saying some really unflattering things, you know, in the chat room
that.
There, in text. Did you see any of them at all? Or?
No. Foil Hat Soldier, he emailed me like an hour later or the next day, told me what was going on. I heard it from you. But nothing specific, and I just, you know, and I guess once somebody figured out how to ignore that person, it was a universal push. Everybody ignored her at the same time.
I don't even think it was a her. I mean,
who knows? Who knows?
It's the first misogynist. If it's a her, then she's the first misogynist female I ever met. I was thinking it might have been an alias or something.
I'm sure most of it is. Well, it is. I mean, look at your username. In the chat room.
Yeah, right.
You got Camo.
There you go.
I mean, look at Camo Mike.
Yep.
One thing I think we could maybe make a safe assumption is that Mike is his first name. You know, it's not a, you know, it's not a big deal. Everybody had, that's what they have it for, you know. I know Murica. I think he's from Tennessee, if I remember right. And he was livid because I wasn't on until the next night. And You must have not listened. You must not been listening for the last few episodes when I said I'll be moving to Sunday night. Julie's going to take over Saturday nights because Julie works full time Monday through Friday and part of Saturday.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'm retired, so I can go on any time. It doesn't matter to me. So you know, make it easier for her. I told her she could have Saturday or Sunday, and she wanted Sunday, and I said no, you get Saturday. I'll take Sunday.
John and I are in the same boat. We got more time than money.
If only the inverse was true. You know, I got to tell you. You know what? Maybe we should do this. I don't know. I'm thinking maybe we should do the golden hour now.
What are you going to do for Sunday?
I'll find. I always find something. I'm trying to decide if this is. No, I don't want to do that right now. We'll do that Sunday.
I would like to put in a suggestion. It might not be for this Sunday, but maybe for a future show. John, you should go to a rifle range, and then we can actually videotape and put it on your Facebook website.
I'm sorry, you want to do what?
Go to a rifle range.
Okay.
Yeah, and record it.
That's,
then put it on the Facebook page.
And for why? I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Because...
It's been
just
done
because,
before. Just because.
Not on your site.
Yeah, but look, I don't know. What is
okay.
Kamo Mike is making disparaging remarks, and he needs to be punished. First of all, he says sledgehammers are not precision instruments. That's a shot at Terry. Kamo Mike says, and I am into comms. Well, I figured that by your name. And then he takes a shot at me, saying, you have 60 minutes left to do it in real time. Maybe I don't want to do it in real time. Maybe I don't want to do it at all tonight. I'm telling you. You know, we've talked before a few times. And now that I got Chuck on the air, Chuck can verify. Chuck, you remember when we had our prepper group meetings? Do you remember playing the game of what's in my pocket?
Yes. Was that Terry or
no?
Oh my gosh! No, but you had a gentleman that was
speaking.
Yeah,
he moved. He retired from the Navy, moved to Missouri, and now he's living in Georgia. God, I can't remember his name now. He was really knowledgeable. We were so
Trey, I think. I'm trying to remember his name.
Trey,
right. He was very knowledgeable.
He was – we were so blessed to have him for the few months that we did because he had it all. I mean, he knew a lot, and he was willing to share it. I wish he had another 10 years on his enlistment so we could keep him around, but that wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So.
Right. Hey, maybe we can do something like that, make a video out of it, John.
We could. What is it with you and your videos? You are just insane with your videos. Speaking of videos.
You have a Facebook page. It's meant to be multimedia capable.
I know.
I mean, what is that?
Well, you know what? Speaking of which, you want to take – all right. Our op officer, Kenny in McHenry, has scheduled a 12-mile walk with 40-pound packs for early September. I'm waiting for him to get back to me on the exact date, place, and time. And you could go ahead and you can – video that because I think that's much more interesting.
We were supposed to bring our own packs, then load it with rocks or something.
Whatever you want to. I would suggest maybe I'm just going to throw a bunch of my stored water in the backpack because that will add up fast because water is heavy.
Mm-hmm. 40 pounds.
Pack it with water with a little leak in it. And by the time you get to the end, it's like, man, it's easy.
If you do that, you're going to have a soaking wet pack because of the condensation, though, I think.
Mine's not refrigerated. Well, I don't have that much room in my refrigerator to put that in there. But it was it's 6 miles to the waypoint and 6 miles back. So I'm waiting for him to get back.
I'll bring my FRS radio and I'll ask.
That might not be a bad idea.
Also. Yeah,
you know
so I can
That's
cry for
a
help.
Bad idea.
Well, I have a Charlie horse.
I got a Charlie horse. I need my Vagisil. It hurts.
So this would be like a civilian 12-mile road march radio reality TV.
Well, you know what? I think it'd be something interesting. I think every prepper group should do it. Let's face it. Sometimes, you know, if it's an EMP, you can kiss your car goodbye. And it's just not going to run. It ain't going to work. Oh, what's Camo Mike saying now? He said, no, it was not a shot. It was worth a shot.
Hey. Hey. Here's my salute to Camo Mike.
Mm-hmm.
That good thing is not video. Hey, maybe the hey, that's a veteran thing. Maybe this would be like that TV show Naked and Afraid.
No.
You'll get more viewers.
Yeah, but they don't want to see it.
Night vision camera. No.
Oh, here we go.
You
two are just about. Kamal Mike says, hey, your GHB, which is your get-home bag, we talked about that Sunday night, if you missed it. He walked with his for 5 miles, and it took about an hour, and he was able to gauge how long it would take to get home. That is what it's about. We talk about it here on the radio, and then go out there with your prepper group, and if your prepper group won't do it, go out there by yourself and do it.
Since we're talking about get out of Dodge bags or GHB bags or get home bags,
right.
Hey, if you want to figure out how to carry food in there, but without taking up too much weight or space, hey, that Wise 372 hour box for $20 might be something good that you can use in your bag. So
sure.
Yep.
And I would suggest also that you don't have to have a 40-pound pack, but you should be carrying at least 40 pounds that are not your own. Whether that means putting a pistol belt on or a web belt with a couple canteens of water on there, plus your backpack. Look, one thing you can't do here in the People's Democratic Republic of Illinois, don't go walking around with weapons and ammunition in your backpack. Nothing good will come from it.
Right.
And,
agreed.
And Mike says, he says, it was different than I thought because it took longer than he thought. That is true. Don't forget, when your blood is pumping, your adrenaline's pumping, it's going to take a lot longer. It's going to wear on you physically a lot quicker. So that's why we keep saying, try to get into prepper fitness. And not gym fitness. I mean, gym fitness is okay. Prepper fitness is a whole different world. And you need to get into prepper fitness. Look, it's hard. If it was easy, we'd all be doing it. But it's,
if you really want to train yourself or test the different conditions, do it one day when it's raining. Do it one day when it's beautiful outside. Do it one day at night. Another day when it's cold.
Yep.
You know. Do it another day.
Do it when it's going to be over 100 degrees, like it is for me tomorrow.
Yeah. So, you know, you just pick different conditions because what if it happens during a really bad rainy time?
Well, sure. Why couldn't it? You know, and something you need to know, if for you new preppers out there, you're listening – and you've never done this before, everything, one, looks different at night than it does during the day. And you can't use a flashlight. Put yourself in the position, the scenario that you can't use your flashlight. It's a little tough. But if you take your time, you can get through it. If you rush it, well, you're going to trip and stuff, and it's a bad thing. But definitely, you know, the Israeli military, their paratroopers, do a lot of training at night because of the fact that everything looks
without
so different. I don't know. I've never joined the Israeli military. I do know that the reason they train at night is the philosophy is if you can do it at night, you can do it during the daytime. So.
Okay.
Well, if you – there's – just like the U.S.
Terry will
Army.
Tell you. Well, like Terry
in the
will
infantry,
tell you.
Yeah, we train a lot at night because if you own the night, you
right.
can own the terrain. Because
right.
There's a huge advantage if you can operate at night or if you have discipline while in place.
And you know what, and Terry, you're right. You're absolutely right. And to further expand on that, when you go through the Ranger training, the Ranger test, the U.S. Army Ranger test, one of the things they have you do is that you do land navigation at night. That's a real trick. And people get lost on that all the time. But but that's another hard one. Do land navigation at night.
Yeah. Like SFAS, you got a 3-day and 3-night land nav. You're by yourself. Do not get ever caught talking to anybody. Somebody would come up and say something to me. I'd be like, no. And I'd say it nice and loud with my hand up. No. You say, I want to ask you, no. Get away. I can't talk to you. No, really, because you don't know if any of the cadre are anywhere around. It could be anywhere.
Right.
Okay.
And when you're doing that,
I'm not throwing away my chances of passing because some fool wants to ask me what time it is or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
You know. So, but I tell you what, other than that, it was just the loneliest land nav you've ever seen.
It is. Now, one thing, this is something that Mike, go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I was going to say it, and you're talking about between one point and the next point, you probably have around 5-6 points maybe. And between one point and the other is anywhere from 1 mile to 6 miles apart. You know, so you're just crisscrossing lots of different terrain, lots of different areas.
It's tough.
You know, and if you mess it up, you know, you'll be messed up the whole night.
One of the things that Mike said, he says he calculated on a map routes to get home from possible breakdown locations using railroad tracks and utility rights of ways and skirting subdivisions in downtown areas.
It's actually a good idea.
And you know what? And this is why night vision is very important. You're right, Mike. It's very important. You know.
I would suggest that if anybody out there wants to give it a shot, one, don't do it by yourself. Go with a team of like 2, 3, 4 people, you know. Two, have somebody that's in access to a vehicle that's a support, like your support team. They know that you're going from here to there to there. So if anything happens along the way, like say you broke your ankle, you fell off to the side, they have a very good general idea about where you should be. You should be anywhere between here and there. So in case there is a search party, they can find you. Two,
I was
going to
recommend
three
stations, resting stations or something.
Yeah,
what do you think?
You can do that from point to point to point, from point A to B to C to D.
Yep.
And you can set up caches. You know, you can do all kinds of different stuff to support yourself. But but for safety's sake, you know, have somebody that's in a standby. Maybe it's somebody's wife. Maybe you leave a map with somebody too, with drawing out the general area where you're going. Also, try, if you're going to do it at night, try it with a full moon. Take the most advantage of you can. You'll get used to it. It'll be enough challenge if you're truly a beginner. But then again, you can still see. You know, we're not talking about in the city. We're talking about out in the country where, you know, so you can walk around.
Not only that, but you're also simulating. What's good about doing it now, no one's out hunting you or trying to kill you.
there you go.
This is a chance to get to know yourself, what you are capable of doing, and what you just can't do. Look, not everybody's going to be, you know, Johnny Appleseed cross-country trekker. It's not going to happen. Some people are. Some people aren't. And it's also going to test your physical conditioning, which you need to have. You need to have it all. You need to know it. If you don't know yourself, how are you supposed to know others?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to lead, if you happen to even find yourself as a leader, you have to know what it's like to have to go through all this stuff. I mean, do you know what it's really like to get blisters and have to keep walking? Not everybody's feet is made the same, especially civilians.
It sucks. Been there, done that, it sucks. But when Terry goes for his, you know, Terry, when you go for your hike, this is going to be you, pal. There you go. That's Terry's walk in the woods.
Some poor Farmer John's like, what the hell's going on out there?
I'm under siege. Leave me alone. Don't talk to me. No. Whatever it is, the answer is no. Get away from me.
Flashbacks from a school. but there are good ways to do this. You know, you got to be smart. Don't ever do it by yourself alone. Not telling anybody where you're going.
Right.
It's just necessary. I mean, this ain't no macho game for anybody out there who thinks that I don't need anybody. Bullshit. Don't be stupid. Just
Don't be stupid. It's just an exercise. It's a drill. It's a test for yourself. And you know what? You know what's really hard too, and I think Terry will follow on me on this, is when you are going through you're doing your walk, you need to keep combat spacing. So you're talking about 5 or 6 feet from the person in front of you and the person behind you. It's not easy in the dark. It is not easy at all. But it can be done. And this is why you should do it with your prepper group. And if you want to get really crazy, do it in fire team formations. Oh, yeah. And then maintain that formation as you cross terrain. It's not easy. It's not supposed to be. If it did, we'd all be mercenaries by now.
Yeah. That's how I make my beer money. Now we know. The nose knows. But like... You know, I mean, if people want to get out there and do something, hopefully you are going with somebody who's done something like that before. You know, it's another thing, too, is also do it with a bicycle.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
You might get access to a bicycle. You want to cross terrain faster or easier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you can scarf up a bike somewhere, like say in the MP, hey, you better have your bikes locked up because if I have to walk 50 miles, I'm going to scarf me a bike somewhere.
Darn right.
And pray somehow I can repay him in the future, you know. But but I was able to get home and see my family because you have to regroup, you know. So try it during a bicycle with a bike.
Those are all good points. And look, try to put yourself in a grid down situation without having to go through the grid down situation. I mean, there's one way to, yes, you can be, like Terry said, you could be the lone wolf, get yourself all messed up and whatnot, or you can do it with your prepper group, get some good training, some good ideas how to do it. I would also suggest you use bug spray. I do not recommend any scented bug spray. I would use the military bug spray. It's like $3 to $5 on eBay. Get a bottle of that, slather it on, head out to the woods.
Not in your eyes, not in your mouth.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. It's not for eating or drinking. Don't screw it up. That's for sure. So, All right. Well, Kamal Mike has posted a paragraph in the chat room. And he says, when I was about 15, a guy in my neighborhood who served in the Army and went to Panama when Terry did, used to have some of my friends and I do night marches and patrols. That was awesome. Definitely before Call of Duty.
As in the game?
I would believe so, yes. You mean Call of Duty isn't real? Oh, man. I mean, I actually have to go outside and do something. I just can't hit a controller and have people do it. Oh, man. What a downer.
What?
Damn. Oh, man.
But, like, yeah, even if you wanted to do it by yourself, say like you're doing some testing, or
right.
you don't have any friends. Okay, fine. It's still smart to have somebody know your basic route, at least.
Oh yeah.
Just say,
absolutely.
Hey buddy, I'm just gonna do this, and if you don't hear from me in the morning or something like that, then something happened along the way.
Right.
I mean, even professional people that, like, they want to climb Mount Everest or they want to do any type of cross-country stuff, they give routes. There's
right.
a very good reason for this. I mean, and they're trained professionals.
Right.
Even if you have a scout and they're taking you out on hunting trails and stuff like that, they let their base know where they're going.
That's
There's
correct.
A very good reason for that. And you can even be in a party of 4, 5, 6 guys, and everybody could be packing, but it still doesn't mean something can't happen.
Right.
Yep.
There you go, Terry. Point well made.
You just couldn't help push that button, huh?
I've got lots of stuff. Or I could give you this one. Would you like this one instead?
You know, Woody Woodpecker.
Wait. I got one more I want to try on you. As soon as I find it. Here you
the
go.
The golf clap.
Yay!
Yay! You know, I've played like multiple times.
Yay!
Well, it's going to be over 100 degrees tomorrow here in the People's Democratic Republic of Illinois.
Really?
So
it's going to be that
yeah,
hard.
The next, it was like that today. It'll be like be worse tomorrow. Then it'll lessen up a little bit by tomorrow or the next day. Was it Friday? Friday, yeah. In the meantime, no, Thursday will lessen up. Okay. Anything else we need to discuss, gentlemen?
Well, I got a few comments to make at the close. So,
well,
final words.
Well, fire away then.
Okay. So, let's go back to the concept and the benefits of prepping. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, prepping is not something that only, you know, extreme preppers do or crazy people do. Prepping is not meant only for the apocalypse. It's meant for any disaster or unforeseen circumstances that any individual can possibly encounter. Take the country of Venezuela right now. Severe food shortage. Zoo animals are being killed for food. Family pets are being killed for food. That's probably the closest to a zombie apocalypse that you can possibly come to in real life, and that is millions of people in the country that's starving right now. Anyone who happens to have a cache of food, and if the public knows about it or other people know about it, their home was probably ransacked by now, and all their supplies were probably taken, and they were probably killed or severely injured. Okay, it's meant for the unthinkable. It's meant for the events that are unthinkable, that people can't possibly believe that it can happen in their time. What's happening in Venezuela is the unthinkable. And people once thought it could never happen in their time, in their country. Okay? Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Irene. When the hurricane went inland, okay, and cut off communications,
a whole bunch of stores were out of generators or out of food. People were stranded due to flooding. And if there are any preppers then, I guarantee you they used their press for at least a couple of days to hold out until help was able to reach them. Prepping is not meant for the apocalypse, although it could help if you do encounter something like the apocalypse. But any unforeseen circumstances that will leave your family without food, without water, without first responders being able to come to your aid in your time of need. That's when the prepping comes in handy, and that's when it's an insurance policy that you can basically build up and have it for your family in case they need it. It's one of those things where, you know, you may not need it, but it's better to have than to have not. And I can guarantee you if something like that happened in your time, you'd rather be in the have than in the have not. You don't want to be one of these people just holding out your hands begging and hoping that someone will be generous to share their stuff with you. So that's basically all that I wanted to. That's my spiel and my rant about the benefits of prepping. And I would request everyone to take that seriously. If you're a parent, if you're an uncle, if you have kids, okay, it's your responsibility to make sure that you provide for their safety, their security, and their food when they need it. When you're not prepared, it's a very unfortunate, tragic, and embarrassing situation for you. So keep that in mind if you're trying to decide what should I do or how should I start. Start with the basics: food, water, medical supplies. And that's all I got.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah. It's kind of like, why do people keep yelling here? I knew you were going to push that button.
You knew it.
It's kind of like, why do people conceal and carry? Well, they're not looking to shoot anybody. They're just looking to protect themselves, if need be. I mean, how many millions of people are carrying right now, every day? They don't shoot anybody all the time. I mean, they don't just wave it around. Hell, they'd rather just, you know, not pull it out and have no problems.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
if they need it, they got it.
All right, then. All right. Chuck, good point. Good commentary. Take it take it seriously.
Thank you.
I think what you said was very right. You have a responsibility to your spouse, your children. And if you don't, you're going to be humiliated and embarrassed when you got to go out there and beg and hope someone has compassion upon you and is willing to share. So think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Terry, you have something you want to say?
I believe this is also biblical. It's your responsibility.
It well, sure it
you
is.
Know, as the man of the house. Then again, it's also your responsibility to take care of those in need.
If you can. If, you know, I don't have, you know, if you, you know, that's why you have what's called the charity catch, because you want to make sure, you know what, you may not be able to supply for everybody, but maybe you could put a little bit aside for what they call charity. So that way, if you get the odd person that, you know, did not take Chuck's advice and warnings, that you could give them maybe a little water or whatever. Maybe a little food or something. But you don't ever do that at the detriment of your own family or your own prepper group. You don't do it. That's why you have the charity side. And that's okay. Mr. Terry, you have something you want to say to the world before we shut down?
Well, kind of going back to that discussion I had with one fellow on Facebook. One, you don't need to explain yourself to anybody.
Do not.
Okay? You do things what you see is what you feel is right. And if you're taking care of business and you're being prudent on how you handle things, then you're not wrong. You're not wrong. So don't try to or feel like you have a need to justify yourself to any liberals, okay? If they don't like it, I'm going to kiss your ass. And if you're a proud American and you are know that you're doing good, then be proud and state so, because we need people that stand up for the right reason, that people that will say, no, these things are wrong, and I'm going to tell you it's wrong. This is, you know, to hell with this, all this PC shit. This is going too far, okay? It's going so far is that now it's just wrong to say anything about it. Well, like against gays. Well, you know, I'm not damning gays, but if you want to bring up the idea of homosexuality, yeah, I'm saying you're wrong. It's in the Bible, okay? I didn't write the Bible, but I believe in the Bible, and I'm raised by the Bible. My household is... holds this certain standards, just like adultery, or you know, infidelities, or stealing, or coveting someone's property. It's the same thing. I mean, we hold certain standards. So, you know, don't be ashamed of yourself. And if somebody thinks that you're going to be in a prepper, if somebody thinks that you're being crazy, or you're just you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money. No, you're doing the right thing. So you stand your ground, and you fight fire with logic, the facts. There you go. God bless America.
And there, that will do it for the roundtable report tonight. Thank Chuck and Terry for calling in and participating. I always enjoy the live callers. It makes the show go by faster and much more interesting than if I do it myself. So I just want to say thank you guys for joining me. As for the rest of my prepper and patriot friends, I say it to you, before I say it to you, Saturday night, Ladies of the Watch, 8 o'clock Central Daylight Time. Be Julie, Ladies of the Watch. And guys, I want you to know something. It's not just for the ladies, because I know guys have been calling in and chiming in with Julie, and she really appreciates it, and she likes that a lot. And then I'll be on Sunday night at 8 o'clock for my show. This has been the Roundtable Report at Contra Radio Network. I'm John Jeffers with Terry and Chuck. And from Pepper and Patriot friends, be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. And we will talk to you very shortly. Thanks again. Good night. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More. Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More. Wine and More.